Hello and welcome to the Charlex Podcast. I'm your host, Michaela Smith, joined by producer
Cooper Moss.
If you're just joining us for the first time, the Charlex Podcast is a bi-weekly deep dive into all things marketing. We break down the latest news, explore trending topics, and delve into both innovative and tried and true marketing strategies with our subject matter experts, many of whom are Charlex team members. We'll hear from senior producer and cinematographer James Drescher today about how our video team approaches the video shoot day. But before we do that, let's get to the latest news. Cooper, what do we got?
Google recently announced expansion of its sensitive ad categories options within its display network. The expansion helps users limit ads on pregnancy, parenting, weight loss, and dating in addition to its existing gambling and alcohol categories.
So I had heard that this is only going to, the restrictions on ads are only on YouTube right now and the Google Display Network. So if you're searching on Google or you're shopping on Google, you might still get ads about this, about these sensitive topics that you don't want. Mm-hmm. But it's at least a step for consumers who are, you know, more and more wanting privacy, wanting to control what they see online. It's kind of throwing them a bone. Again, for advertisers, I feel like Google's constantly knocking us down. Mm-hmm. But the pro side here is that you're going to get people who are going to see your ads that are more likely to want to see your ads. You're not just kind of spamming everybody at once. So there's kind of a little bit of a give and take for advertisers.
This kind of reminds me of like a kind of a continuation. Do you remember? I feel like the first time people were really made aware of targeted advertising was a few years ago, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, was the story of the dad who found out his daughter was pregnant because of targeted ads. Do you remember this?
No.
There's a story that a few years ago where this dad was like scrolling through like target.com or something, and he kept getting targeted ads for like baby stuff, like diapers and, you know, carriages and whatnot. And he went to his daughter and she's like, yeah. And then that story, I don't know if you like posted on Reddit somewhere, but like to me, that was the first time it kind of registered that targeted ads were a thing.
That's really interesting. And I mean, this isn't like, it's not going to be maybe the perfect solution that people are like, if you're, you know, struggling, you know, with some sort of issue around food or weight loss and you don't want to see weight loss ads anymore, you might not get ads targeted by a specific company that is about, you know, exercise only, or, you know, that their whole model is a diet plan. You might not get ads from that company, but you still could get an ad that's related to hiking, and you might see a picture of somebody, you know, working out or, you know, training or on a hike. So it's not going to be a perfect solution, but that it's, you know, for those who are really wanting it, it's a step in that direction of, you know, more control for the end users. For advertisers, it's just going to mean maybe perhaps better targeting and being a little bit more strategic there.
Absolutely.
In our next piece of news, Instagram head Adam Mosseri recently announced a significant algorithm update to prioritize original content on the platform. Now, created content will rank above reshared or edited content to better support its community of creators.
I think this has kind of been a weird trend on Instagram of people reposting stuff from either like Twitter or re-uploading from like TikTok or something. Mm-hmm. And I think this is just another push to kind of keep things within the platform. I know TikTok does this where they don't really like it if you upload to TikTok. They prefer it if you do it all in app. So it feels like Instagram's kind of taking this as its next step.
Yeah, I think it's really not clear yet exactly how they're going to be changing this. But I do think it's nice that Instagram is acknowledging, you know, the many creators who are on their platform and, you know, doing that as a full-time job or, you know, doing that professionally. They're kind of at least acknowledging that those people maybe deserve more credit for that original content. I wonder what this is going to mean for meme culture.
There's still Twitter and Reddit, so.
Right, true. But yeah, so many accounts are just, you know, curating the latest viral post or meme and, you know, can really count on that to boost engagement and boost their numbers. They're going to have to change their strategy pretty soon.
And yeah. And I mean, I follow a lot of like digital art pages. And so how is Instagram going to be able to identify the difference between like a meme versus like a digital art, you know? Yeah. So I'm curious about that. There's going to be a lot of there's probably a pretty bumpy road ahead for Instagram for a lot of this, but.
And figuring out which one is the original and, yeah. you know, probably a lot of it comes down to time posted and, mm-hmm. and things like that.
For
we'll
sure.
see.
Virtual reality is hitting store shelves this month after Meta announced plans to launch its first brick and mortar retail space with a lineup of hardware, including its Quest headset, Ray-Ban Stories smart glasses, and Portal. The flagship store will open May 9th at the company's Meta Burlingame campus.
It's really shocking. I mean, it's the opposite of what I would expect for, you know, virtual reality mm-hmm. to be getting a physical retail space. But, you know, I think this is just Meta's chance to troubleshoot it. Mm-hmm. It might be nice that people can come in and try on these things that, you know, and test them out, the things that they are hearing about that Meta's really trying to push and are really not clear to maybe the end buyers at this point. And maybe it has something to do with people wanting to get back into physical retail mm-hmm. stores after the pandemic. I have a feeling, though, that this is not going to stick around for all that long.
This reminds me of the Amazon 4-star stores. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, those were, like, what was that, like a year or two of those?
Right.
And then they're gone just like that because no one yeah. really, because that's not what Amazon's for. And I feel like right. with Meta, and also I'm curious because is it just going to be this store and they want to expand it out? Or, you know, how expansive is this going to be? Because the whole point of this is to get people to actually interact with Meta. But if it's only going to be a handful of stores, then what's the point?
Well, and it's them trying to push these new specific virtual reality products.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, people associate, like Amazon, they associate Meta with an online experience with that virtual reality.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. I don't know. I just have a gut feeling, though, that this is just, you know, kind of a pet project for them at the time, and it's not going to stick around.
For sure. I agree.
Well, that's all our latest marketing news for the day. Stay tuned for Conversation with James Drescher. We're back with James Drescher, senior producer and cinematographer. How are you, James?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. We are talking about production today. We've talked to a few other Trilix individuals about video pre-production and that planning phase and how important that is. How important is it for you to have, you know, a good plan in place before you start production?
Yeah, I would say it's almost as important as having the right camera on set. I mean, if you don't have good pre-production and client interaction, then you're not going to be accurate when it comes to telling the story or even telling the story on based on their needs. They come with pretty precise needs of what they need, and we're able to kind of be flexible with that. And if you don't know those things, you're just kind of showing up blind, which is a huge, huge mistake.
You're not going in on production day and, you know, writing the story there. You already have kind of an idea of what that story is going to be before you go.
Yeah, for sure. You have to understand their needs before you can start with even the idea of what you need for production. If I have to go in there with interview stuff, I know the interview has to be based around certain questions. If it's a voiceover type production, then you have to go in knowing your story already. So it's like skipping a major step if you don't do that pre-production, and it's become pivotal for our team to understand the story, understand what they're paying for, what they need. We don't want to make them something with the money that they have that isn't going to return their investment, because that would be a wasted opportunity.
Absolutely. And you need to know the story and you know what you're going to do in order to know what gear to pack. I mean, and you guys have an awful lot of gear.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We have a bunch of tools in the toolbox, and some things do some things and some things don't. And when you go on a project and you know what you need to do, you need to pack the right tools for all stories.
And how do you prep all of that gear? I mean, do you have to go in and check each battery, make sure everything's charged, I assume?
Yeah, it's kind of that story and that you don't see behind before you can tell the story. We have a pretty organized batch of gear nowadays that we have over 7 cameras, and unfortunately, most of those cameras take different batteries because of when you buy cameras and the technology that progresses. I mean, I probably think we have over 100 batteries that we have to make sure we charge, make sure we have the appropriate chargers, cords, and everything, depending on what we use. So with that, that's just the camera bodies. Then you have audio, then you have lights, and then you have rigging equipment, depending on where you're going to be, if you're going to be outside, if you're going to be inside. We do a lot of interviews with clients on their location, going to them. So half the battle is understanding the room you're going to be in, what noises are outside, what light's going to look like, what time of day. Scouting comes in a huge part with pre-production, just being able to go there and see what's best so you're not making those decisions on the day and you feel prepared.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned, you know, half the battle is knowing where you're going to be shooting. How far have you guys traveled? I mean, how many states have you been in?
Oh, geez. I mean, just with our Birmingham office, we do a lot of work down there. But in our career, we've probably shot in most of the states, besides like the upper Northwest. We have a lot of great clients that travel each year, like IFP, NCAA. They have their championships and they have their meetings in different states every year. So we get a chance to travel, not to mention the agriculture clients that we get to meet the farmers from all over the Midwest and even out east. And then the manufacturing clients down south. It's never a dull moment, but you always have to be prepared. One of our biggest pieces of equipment is our grip truck that we were lucky enough to be equipped out to house all that stuff. So you're not trying to pack for every single trip. You have a place for everything and you're prepared for everything. And we've put quite the miles on that thing the past 4 years. So it's pretty nice to have. And with the right tools, you can do the right job.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you start on a shoot day, I mean, what time are you guys going? Obviously, it depends on the location. I mean, are they all full day shoots? Sometimes do you have, you know, just partial day?
Yeah. It really all depends on the planning. You might see on the shoot calendar, it's an 8 to 5 job, but that means there's probably a day of prep and a day of teardown. And of course, if we're shooting interviews, if you're doing it right, you're probably setting up for at least an hour, hour and a half, depending on how many cameras you use. So shoot days can bridge from 3 hours to 15, 16 hours for some big events that we've done that you have to be on set all day. So you just got to be prepared. There's always a buffer on the before the shoot and a buffer after the shoot that you just can't skip. You can't skip the prep and you can't skip the teardown, or you're not leaving yourself with much room to make those decisions that you have to when it comes time to record.
Yeah, and that's a good reminder. You're not, you know, flying in, capturing some video quickly and flying out. And sometimes for, you know, live events, you're there for shooting for days, right?
Yep. Some of the bigger events that we've done, they're 5, 6, 7 days of shooting. And that's just the shooting part. The pre-production that goes into those events are sometimes weeks. And then the travel, it's not easy to get through airports with 15, 16 cases of gear.
And a million batteries and SD cards.
Yeah. And getting through TSA, it's a fine art. And we've navigated it. And every single time you go, you learn more. So it's one of those things.
So what do you do if you get on set and, you know, maybe you planned on some wonderful natural light and, you know, that day it's cloudy, or something that you planned on being there wasn't there? What do you do when something goes wrong?
Yeah, you can do as much pre-production as you want for all these jobs, but a production day is essentially 1,000 different decisions that you have to make. And if you get your gear right and you get your gear that you need, you can focus on making those decisions that you have to make, anywhere from angles, light, sound, where framing on cameras. Those are all things that you have to have full attention to. So doing the pre-production for the gear is done beforehand. And when you get on set, you're ready for anything. It can be anything from a lawnmower outside that you have to go deal with to, yesterday when we scouted, it was bright sun. Now it's overcast. So with experience comes, you have the ability to make those changes on the fly, and they're not detrimental, and they're not like, oh, you have to reschedule. You have 1,000 decisions to make during a production day. And that's as nutshell as it gets, is that's production day, making small decisions that become a big story.
Yeah, kind of planning for what you can't plan for,
yep.
essentially.
Yep.
And what do you do for those moments when you have everything scheduled out and, you know, maybe you're still, you don't have enough time to capture B-roll, or, you know, how many people do you bring to each shoot?
Yeah, I think that's one of the major things with pre-production and budget is you get a budget from a client and or you get a scope of work and you have to make those decisions beforehand. You can't show up to a shoot that you're having 13 interviews a day with one shooter. It's just not smart because then you don't have the second set of eyes. You don't have someone that you can bounce ideas off of. A lot of time, we all have our roles, either asking questions, making sure audio, light. We're very, very blessed on our team that most of our team, we all have different like levels of expertise. We have Nick who loves light and he's really good at it. We have Chad that likes audio and content and those things that, you know, when you go with whatever shooter you go with, is you just lean on each other's strengths and getting on a shoot. You are comfortable with that, and then you can split up and shoot B-roll, and then you can come back and shoot interviews. And normally those days are pretty well thought out, so we don't run into those problems with having not enough time. But Trilex has always been amazing at, you know, whatever we need to do to get the story. If it fits in the budget, if it doesn't, we got to get the story. So we always use the analogy, you can't build a house without the lumber. You just can't do it. So I've never had been on a shoot where we've said, you know what, we can't do B-roll for this one because we don't have the time or budget. So it's just not an option and it's not how we do it. So,
yeah. And I think that you make a good point. And I know that's something that you're passionate about is not, you know, necessarily getting just the details of a product or service. You're telling a story. It's relatable to everybody, even if they don't understand what the industry is.
Yeah, I think just being in this profession for as long as we have, you learn a lot about a little about a lot. So we always do the analogy, we're like 100 yards wide, but only 5 feet deep. But with that said, you have to know a little bit about what you're walking into. I can't walk into agriculture and pretend that I know what I'm talking about. You have to know what they're trying to do with their product, just like other clients. You have to know the purpose before you can tell the story. So that's as important or arguably more important than having the right camera on set.
Absolutely. And can you give us some specifics on lighting? I know, you know, it's hard enough on a regular shoot to set up perfect lighting, but you guys recently shot in the dark, right? Christmas lights in the dark.
Yeah.
That would be incredibly hard.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you have a good set of gear, and that's where we put a lot of time into, is making sure we purchase the right gear. Because for what we do, we're run and gun, and we're also asked to do major studio shoots. So you have to have the right gear. And now in the market, I mean, there's cameras for everything. You can buy a 12K camera. You can buy a camera that just shoots slow motion. But you have to have the right gear in order to serve all of our clients. So that's the difference between being like a movie maker that is pretty much standard making movies and an agency. We have to have the right gear. So our lights that we've accumulated over the years are very versatile. We can shoot pretty much anything. Each light does something different. That's the same thing with each camera, with each lens. The Jolly Holiday lights with the Christmas lights, I mean, you have to think of everything. You have to think, are these LED lights? Are these going to flicker on camera? If so, how can I correct that now? Because once it gets recorded, it's not getting fixed.
Right.
So luckily, they all had the brand new lights, so we didn't have that problem. But I mean, over 100 different lighting fixtures, you kind of hope you got to nail that, or you don't have a story. So
yes, absolutely.
Those little decisions that no one thinks about, it's just kind of everyday life.
Yeah. And how do you, I know, you know, being in front of a camera is not everybody's strong suit. They're not that comfortable with it. Maybe that's holding back some people from, you know, having a video as part of their marketing mix. How do you help interviewees become comfortable behind the camera if they've never sat down for an interview before?
Really, we're asking, how do we get people to be more comfortable on the podcast?
Yeah, we need some tips.
Yeah. honest to God, it's just, it's people skills. It's, reassuring that this is something that is for you. Whenever we go into a client, a lot of people have media, like they're afraid of the media, which mm-hmm. they're afraid of getting their stories twisted. But we walk into every shoot and we tell the clients or tell the interviewee, this is what we're here for. We're here to have a conversation with you and tell your story. We're not here to twist your words. Mm-hmm. We're going to give you final edit. So you get to approve this. We're here to make the most of your investment and also to tell your story, to make the most of what you can do outside of it. So with that said, you just have to kind of reassure people that you're here to be on their side. You kind of clear the air with what's going to happen. And then you kind of let them go with it. And if you got to read people, I mean, production is not just cameras. It's a lot of interviews. With our staff, we got some amazing producers on staff. So being able to read a person and see that this person's not that comfortable. So I have to kind of readdress my questions or give them a few easy ones or, you know, go to their strong suits.
Right. Have them focus on you and not the camera lens.
Yep. Yep. And on set can be pretty intimidating. There's times that we have four or five cameras on set with 10 lights and, I mean, 10 people in the room, or it's a one-on-one. So, all those situations, you have to just kind of read your person, communicate with them and connect. Cause if you don't connect with the person, then it's going to be pretty alarming on the video that you're going to be able to tell. So, yeah.
And I think, like you said, you're connecting with that person so they can tell their story. I mean, it's not that, you know, we're going in and just capturing footage that, you know, isn't, they're still, you know, telling what they're passionate about and what they do every day.
Yeah. Maybe it's just the experience that we have, but it's pretty, you can tell the difference between when someone tells a story and when someone does like just a basic corporate video that was thought out, put on paper, and then you're just executing it. Stories can change. And when we do videos with clients, we want them to tell their story because that's the most passionate story that's going to help them the longest.
Absolutely. What happens if the story is changing or, you know, you're interviewing somebody and you're saying, well, I came in here with this idea, but man, this also sounds really interesting. What do you do then?
Yeah, you got to go with it. I mean, that's a lot of people, a lot of clients, not to mention any specific clients, but we do a lot of work with like mental health awareness, Make-A-Wish, things that have stories that you don't necessarily walk into know the full story. So you have to adapt. You have to be able to ask the questions. I mean, there's 1,000 different times that we go in with 10 questions on a piece of paper. And if you read those questions verbatim, you're not doing your job because one answer should provoke another question. And after that, the stories can go. So
absolutely,
that's why it's pivotal to work with the post-production team as well as with pre-production, is to understand this is what we're going into to tell. Mm-hmm. But this is what happened on production day, and then this is what could happen in post-production. So
yeah.
I would say the story starts off with pre-production, can change in pre-production, it can change in production, and then it can change in post-production.
Yeah. But you're all communicating that whole time and saying, stood out to me during production.
Yep. Yep. And if you don't roll with those punches, then you're not telling the best story you can.
Yeah. It'd be a little probably too rigid for that.
Very. Yeah.
How much footage do you have to shoot in order to get, a 2-minute video or, yeah, you know, even longer than that if you're doing a really long series or documentary?
I try not to think about that because, I look at my timesheets and you can see 50 hours a week and you get a 2-minute video out of the end of the week. But that's the work you got to put in to tell the story. So it's one of those things that depending on the story, you can either have a really good percentage of return on investment with your time and shooting, or it's one of those things you got to shoot a lot, like mm-hmm. sports. You have no idea when stuff's going to happen. You have to shoot, and you could shoot for a full day and come out with a minute of usable footage. There's other times that you can go in and you can be over 80% of what you shoot and what is used. So it's just kind of like one of those things that you have to put the time in. And if you don't put the time in, people can tell.
Absolutely. And like you mentioned, I mean, with video, you have to be there to capture that footage. You have to be in the moment on the set. Mm-hmm. What did you guys do during the early days of the pandemic when we couldn't necessarily be there?
Yeah, I would say those days were very challenging, but they're very refreshing because you could see the whole industry change. I mean, everybody had to change everything. Everything that you do on a daily basis, you had to change. Yeah. And with that said, I think our staff in Trilex kind of shined because we could see what their needs were for customers and our clients. And honestly, it would be from week to week because we had no idea how long this was going to last or what we were going to do. So we just rolled with the punches and figured out like what our clients needed at that time because they didn't know and they had to change their pace. They had to almost do a full 180 and then we had to do the same. So with that said, we got really interested in recording Zooms and then that's really where maybe your production value isn't where you want it to be because you can't put a camera in front of someone. Mm-hmm. So your story has to be even stronger.
That's a good point.
We really hit the ground with that. And I think we've done some pretty good work. And it will always be a year that I look back on and say, you know, I thought I knew what I was doing before 2020, but I grew a lot and our department grew a lot with how we work and how you tell stories. So
yeah, you can copy and paste that on pretty much about everything and everyone about 2020. Yep.
It made you really realize that I could have a really nice camera, but if I'm not telling the right stories, so you have to have those foundational experiences and knowledge in order to tell the right stories, regardless if you're using a camera on a MacBook Pro or a camera that costs $15,000.
Yeah.
So
is there anything, you know, from those days that you're carrying forward, whether it's, you know, you want to make sure the story is stronger or this is how we captured audio through Zoom or, you know, whatever other video device?
Yeah, I think it's amazing what 2020 and 2021 has taught us in production. It shows that you can still reach people, even if you can't be around people. So with that said, it just emphasizes the foundational knowledge. It's not the equipment. When you get into this industry, it's all, I want to buy this camera, I want to buy this camera, I want to buy that, I want to buy this lens because that's going to make me a better storyteller. Mm-hmm. And it's totally not the truth. It's, you can have a $70,000 camera, but if you can't tell a story, then you can't,
what's the point?
Yeah, you can't execute. So that was the major thing that COVID kind of reaffirmed was that story is where it is. And story is, if you don't have story, you don't have anything.
Yeah. But now we're, you know, able to go back on set and capture that footage where it is. So once you capture, you know, as many interviews as possible, as much B-roll as possible, what next?
Yeah, I think it really comes down with our team being multifaceted. Like Sydney, for example, she is involved in all three stages. And if you had a pre-production team, a production team, and a post-production team that didn't work together, it'd be a nightmare because you're basically turning over 20, 30, 40 hours of footage to someone that has no knowledge of the process or the client. With our team, it's always, we try to keep the same team for the same client whenever possible, just so we can have familiarity with the people that are on set, but also with their mission. Understanding their mission and handing cards over to an editor, even if you might not have time to tell them about the story, they should and they do have a really good base knowledge of what we're doing for that client. So,
absolutely.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for sharing so much information with us about video production.
And surprise, we have a listener voicemail.
Oh,
from
let's
one.
Let's hear it.
From one, I think his name is Kramer M.
Oh,
calling
my
in.
Gosh.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Chad. I was like, oh.
That's going to pop
Chad
in.
Would never do
Let's
that.
Let's get them both.
That would be great. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
Hey guys, a big fan of the show. First time, long time. I know managing timing and schedules can be one of the most challenging aspects of video production. How do you manage your crew's time throughout a shoot day to capture everything you want to?
That's great. That's the first time I've ever gotten a voicemail call and question. But
yeah, nobody's sending those anymore. if you leave a voicemail, you know, just send a text.
Why isn't it in a text? No, that's a really good question. I think that's just goes back to reading a client and understanding a shoot day. It's is as important as having the right gear on set, but managing your time and knowing how to get what you need without going over budget for the benefit of the client and for the benefit of us at Trilex is essential. If you don't know how to manage your time or split a crew or making sure that you're not shooting 90% of interviews and 10% B-roll, you are really trying to set up the editor for the best success that they can have. That's the one thing that you probably think about the most on a shoot is making sure you have all of those pieces to the puzzle. Because if you turn in footage or go there, you're going to have to go back and you're going to have to redo it. So that's probably the most important thing besides the curveballs you get on a set is time management and understanding what you need for the story and how to get it.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that comes with practice. I mean, how many shoots do you think that you've been on?
Oh, God.
Couldn't count them.
It's been over 12 years. And I think I learned the most from the beginning years because you're just kind of running right. with it.
Trial by fire.
Yeah. When I started this, there wasn't any vlogs or podcasts or, you know, YouTube tutorials on how to shoot video. Digital video just came out. So
awesome.
Most of the mistakes I made, I learned from, and you just try not to make them again. And yeah. Nowadays it's, you're just going off that experience and you're saying, because of these past jobs 10 years ago, I know how to do this job very well. Or every year we do NCAAs, all the things that come out with that, you know how to get around a large venue. Even if you've never been there, you know how to work security. You know how to
you know,
talk to
skill.
Athletes. Yeah. That can be pertained to every single job. I mean, our clients are getting bigger and bigger. And these are jobs that we probably couldn't do 5 years ago. But with the growth of Trilex and the growth of our department and the people that we're bringing in that are passionate about different things, it's actually a lot easier than you think it is now. So yeah.
Now you're expert level, expert senior producer and cinematographer, James Drescher.
Yeah, I'll probably have to go find a new career if I ever get to that expert level, but no.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great.
Absolutely.
It's fun to shed the light on what a lot of people don't see when they see a final video. So thank you for having me.
We're here with Kyle Stoutenberg, producer and editor on our video team. Thank you for joining us, Kyle.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to do some rapid fire questions today, but the whole point is to get to know our video team a little bit better. One thing I do know about you is do not skimp on the umbrellas on your drinks. If you're at the bar, give the man the umbrellas he deserves.
Oh, minimum two. Preferably three.
What's the most you've had?
Probably three. I mean, I'm not a big fan of garnishes. I mean, a lot of drinks are garnished with lime, and I hate lime.
Yeah.
That's like one factor.
Or like the citrus peel. What are you going to do with that?
I mean, I'll eat an orange. I'll eat an orange or I'll eat a lemon, but I don't.
Not the peel.
No. You're not a lime guy? Not a gin and tonic guy?
No.
Really?
I hate gin. Hate gin.
Love gin. Gin's great.
It doesn't go good with an umbrella either.
Dirty
Nothing. I mean, it just really improves your mood immediately.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
All right. Well, anyway, on to more important questions and a very good segue. What's your favorite drink?
My favorite drink, I mean, it just depends on what the mood I'm in, but like a go-to if I'm doing tequila, a Paloma. Like Paloma for sure, just because I love grapefruit. But if I'm doing like a vodka or something like that, I love mules. Like mules are probably my favorite.
Mules.
Those two.
Best part of your job?
Best part of my job is being able to learn from the team that we have. I think that's like one of the greatest things that Trilex has anyway, just because one, Trilex puts people in their positions that they're able to like flourish in, I think. And so naturally they're just going to get better at what they do. So I rely on a lot of people in order to learn more things, kind of fill in the gaps for what I need to learn and gain knowledge on.
Yeah. You're the first YouTube video you ever watched.
Oh my God. First YouTube video. I honestly don't remember.
What year did you think you discovered YouTube?
I think the first year I discovered YouTube is probably, I know for a fact that I got on Facebook 2009.
Mm. Same.
Or 2008, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing it was probably around 2006 or 2007.
Okay. Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Like 2007 is probably
early
when
YouTube.
Yeah. Like early YouTube. I don't really remember much of like the early days of YouTube though. The only thing I used it for at the time, I didn't have like a computer or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I would just use it for like learning piano tutorials. Like I would like learn how to play piano. So I'm like, that there's like a System of a Down song that I remember being like, for sure, the first one of the first like videos I watched repeatedly.
Wow.
Trying to learn a song on piano. But other than that, I don't remember.
Like, that's so wise of you. I think I was just watching like Matchbox 20 music videos and
I mean, it was either that. I remember. Well, our computer couldn't handle it. It was just some like old Dell with like Windows 98. Yeah. But this was back in like just 2010.
Early days.
Yeah. It was like 2010. So it was like when I was still in high school. So, I mean, basically all I was doing with it was trying to load YouTube videos, but then also just looking up Grand Theft Auto cheat codes and like having those on hand. So
other than that, go on GameFacts for that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, or IGN. I mean, yeah, but I don't remember my first YouTube video, like the first one.
It obviously wasn't good enough.
No, not at all. All
right, the first camera that you ever used?
The first camera I ever used was a little Kodak point and shoot. Okay. And I got it from my mom, who got it from my grandma, because my grandma wanted to take pictures of birds. And so we kind of just got into like, they got a printer and they got the Kodak point and shoot. And I kind of got handed down that once I got like better cameras and stuff. The battery lasted like a minute. Mm-hmm. I remember some of the first things I ever shot were from like a vacation in Colorado, and I still have all that stuff.
That's cool.
But other than that, that was like my first camera actually.
Mine was the flip cam.
The flip cam?
I love the flip cam.
I think mine was just on my cell phone. It was terrible, quality. Yeah. But
do you guys remember the Juke?
The Juke?
No.
You remember the Juke?
No. Okay,
so it was like that, like, really thin phone. I mean, they had those, but it was like
the Razor.
But it was like after the Razor, I believe. But yeah, it was called the Juke.
I wasn't cool enough. I guess.
I wasn't either. I mean, I didn't have a phone, so I was just like, I pretended.
Oh my god, these things are weird.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. See, I had the one where it would flip like two ways.
Yeah.
Like the one that would open up and flip sideways.
Yeah. Those the broke Voyage a lot, or something like that.
Yeah, mine broke.
Yeah, I had the Envy. It slid.
Yeah.
Up.
Yep. I was about to say that was the first phone.
I got like 8 years out of that phone.
It's like a Switchblade.
Yeah. But yeah, so I just randomly thought about that.
Well, next question. Do you prefer shooting in low light or bright light?
I prefer shooting in bright light. I mean, I don't prefer either or, I guess. But if I had to, probably bright light, just because I also edit, so I don't want to deal with a bunch of low light footage.
Fair enough.
But you can get more moody footage that way.
Yeah,
you can. I mean, you could also get it in bright light too, depending on the situation you have. But
that's true.
Yeah.
Your go-to dance move?
Oh, my go-to dance move. I don't really know if I have a. I just get into a. I mean, I don't know.
You kind of just like sway side to side.
Oh, I always point. I mean, that's my thing. I point, obviously. Like, I do the point. So when I dance, I think I like kind of like it's kind of like a roll the dice
the
thing,
finger,
and then
yeah.
do that. But okay. other than that, I don't know if I have a go to. I just kind of move. I just kind of move and just embarrass myself probably. But
you and everybody else on the dance floor.
Yeah.
You can. So next question: you can design and build a dream house. The silliest feature that you're going to include in the house would be.
Probably a slide from the top floor all the way to the bottom, just to get to the bottom as efficiently as possible.
Like and the I blank think check scenario.
Yeah, something movie like that. Check. Yeah, I don't even know what that movie is. See, that's another thing I'm talking about, like what we were talking about before. I have no idea. But I know what a slide from the top of the house to the bottom.
Are you thinking more like cool. Wallace and Gromit slide, where you can like where your bed could tip up and slide you down?
Oh,
or
I don't know that one.
You guys don't watch Wallace and Gromit?
No. I've never seen it, but I know what you're talking about in terms of like
a bed. He's in. He likes the idea.
I think it was one of the first ones. Like it would just tip his bed up and you just slide right down. Slide, and he'd fall into his trousers and throw a shirt on him.
I saw a TikTok I've seen a TikTok that this guy just invents terrible inventions like that in terms of like waking people up, but it's like he'll put like hydraulic press type stuff, whatever.
Oh,
so it just like launches people off of it. So it's like, it's not good.
It's like
super unsafe, but it's funny.
It's just for the bit.
Yeah. But it's something similar to that. So he probably gained a little or took a little inspiration from that.
Hmm.
I could see it.
Yeah. All right. Your favorite food?
My favorite food is chicken wings. I love chicken wings.
Okay. What song do you know all the lyrics to?
Probably some Eminem songs from like the Marshall Mathers LP, not appropriate to say
Don't start
on this.
Singing. Yeah.
But probably most of the songs on that that album.
Great album. Okay. Yeah. Favorite thing to meal prep?
Ooh, my favorite thing to meal prep is probably, it just depends on the mood I'm in, I guess, because I'm like, sometimes I'm just like, I get home and I'm like, I want to spend an hour with cleanup and everything like that. So I'll do what I did last night and I made fajitas. Like, I love making chicken fajitas. It's okay. So simple. I think that was one of the things that got me like inspired to get into cooking, because mm-hmm. it was so easy and it's hard to mess up. Mm-hmm. Like, you can still mess it up, but it's easier and you kind of feel accomplished if you don't know as much about cooking, because it's just a few ingredients and you can kind of get a lot done.
Good ingredients.
Yeah, get a lot done with a little bit of time. So that's probably my favorite thing right now.
A nickname that people call you that you hate?
I never really had any nicknames that I hated. Like, some of my nicknames are Queso.
It's harmless.
Yeah, because my last name's so long.
Yeah.
Like Stoutenberg.
Yeah.
It's not as memorable. People want to call me like Stauffenberg, Snossenberg, or whatever.
Okay.
That's
not going to catch on.
It just kind of adds to it. But I don't know. I think Queso is probably my only one, but it doesn't bother me. I like it.
Your favorite TV show?
I watch a lot of reality TV, like trash stuff.
Okay.
So I get into that stuff. So, I mean.
Like what?
Well, I guess in docuseries, I really like that. Like the whole Tiger King era.
Oh, God.
Well, with like the quarantine era Netflix shows, one that came out of it was Love is Blind. And I think that's hilarious. I mean, the concept's really funny, blah, blah, blah. But I think the shows that are going to spin off of that are just
hilarious.
So dumb and hilarious. And
I think Netflix has one now that's like a spinoff of Love is Blind.
Yeah, Love is Blind, the producers of that came out with Ultimatum.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yep, and so that one is an absolute dumpster fire. but it's...
So I should go watch that.
Yeah. Like, it's a good shut your mind off, like just these people exist type thing.
Yeah.
But for shows that are like intellectual and... like
it doesn't
whatever.
Have to be intellectual.
Nah, I'm not an intellectual. So
you want to turn your mind escapism? We want escapism.
We'll clip that out for the promotion.
No. Add that. Just like, I'm not an intellectual.
Okay, mountains or beach?
Mountains.
Okay, I agree. Any pets?
I don't have any pets, but my parents have 3 German shepherds, so I spend a lot of time with them.
Okay.
I'll try to at least see them once or twice a week, once or twice a month. I don't really see them that much anymore. Just with our schedules and whatnot, and
it's a lot
summer
of hair.
Coming up, but at least minimum once a month. Okay. Like, I try to go over and play with them for an hour or so. But.
Okay, your weirdest pet peeve?
I absolutely, and this I will die on this hill. I don't think cursive writing should be taught. I don't think it should be used anywhere.
This is a good take.
I do not think that. I think it's the dumbest thing we are taught, because one, you're never going to use it ever.
And a signature.
Outside of your signature, but even then,
I sign my name with a line sometimes on like important documents and stuff.
Or like when you
don't
have to put my credit
card
in.
Yeah. No, and that's the craziest thing. It's like,
who's going to verify it?
Someone could easily, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that's the dumbest thing.
See, my cursive writing, when we were being taught it, was so much better than the print. So, it's really a downer for me that nobody else uses cursive, because my regular handwriting is chicken scratch, but I don't use it anywhere else besides my signature. And like when they ask you to sign for a receipt or something.
Yeah.
Man, I just do scribble. I'm not going to take the time to do that.
Well, have you ever gone back and tried to read some of someone else's cursive writing?
Oh, no. It's illegible.
You can't.
Nobody uses it. I don't need to do that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's like, that's my favorite thing, is when it's just a lazy form of writing. I hate it. I think it should.
I would say it's too high effort.
Just to read it is such a pain that it's like, it's not. But that's my biggest pet peeve. One of them right now.
That's a good pet peeve. That's a good
one. That's an out of the box one. Well, that's awesome. Yep. Thank you for sitting down with us, Kyle. It's great to get to know you a little bit more.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you to James and Kyle for joining us. Our next episode will conclude our video series, and we'll talk with our team about how they edit the award-winning videos. Remember to rate and subscribe the Trilux podcast on your podcast service of choice, and find us on social media. Thank you.